From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, those open lines. Here's what's happening. Tense times in Hawaii on the Big Island just an hour after a large tremor Friday morning. A 6.9 magnitude earthquake shook the Big Island off Hawaii, sending people fleeing from buildings and community centers, and increasing concerns now about new eruptions from Kilauea. Bystanders said the latest quake appeared to last about 15 seconds. That's a long rumbling time. It came about an hour after a 5.4 magnitude shook the Big Island on Friday, followed by a fifth eruption spewing lava into a little subdivision out there where they have evacuated. We'll keep our eyes on that. I've been getting some calls from some friends in Hawaii. They're tense. A massive sinkhole has opened up on a New Zealand farm, with a volcanologist saying it's the biggest he has ever seen in the country. We've got that story over at coasttocoastam.com for you. The Connecticut Supreme Court has ruled for a new trial to be held for Kennedy cousin Michael Skakel, who was convicted for the 1975 murder of Martha Moxley. Friday's decision by the court vacated Skakel's earlier conviction and ruled that Michael Sherman, his trial lawyer, did not show the court evidence of a possible alibi. A North Carolina food processor has recalled more than 17.7 tons of ground beef, some of which was sold in Kroger stores for possible contamination with plastic bits in the beef. Food safety coach Jeff Nelkin. Jeff, you might as well set up an office here. My gosh, we're calling you every week now.
Well, you know, with all the grinding of meat going on, all it takes is, you know, a plastic gear just not to be lubricated correctly, and all of a sudden it's starting to grind down, and you end up with plastic pieces, you know, in the ground beef. What I'd like to share with you is that there's an interesting website called IWasPoisoned.com, and people can find out very quickly within 5 miles of where they're living what complaints are being called in at various restaurants and food establishments in your area. So I'd like people to check it out and see what they think.
I love that. Thank you, Jeff. Good information. Ground beef, just be careful. Hopefully Kroger is pulling them off the shelves. Women who regularly eat fast food and not enough fruit are most likely to struggle to conceive, according to a new study. A survey of almost 6,000 women found that those who ate fast food four or more times a week took nearly a month longer to get pregnant than those who never or rarely ate it. Just news you can use. The U.S. job growth increased less than expected in April, and the unemployment rate, though, dropped to a 17-and-a-half-year low of 3.9% as some out-of-work Americans simply left the labor force and gave up. Catherine Austin Fitz, our registered investment advisor, with us. Catherine, what does this mean when they just give up looking for work? Are they hopeless?
Well, it depends. You have the baby boomers leaving the workforce because they'd rather take the time, you know, so they can go on Social Security or go on their pensions, and so you have them leaving the workforce. The other thing you have, George, is a lot more people, you know, basically doing an entrepreneurial life. So they're doing part-time things, and they're doing, you know, the gig economy. There is a repatriation of capital happening, and if you look at the numbers, we have a lot of capital moving back into the country. I think tax reform has been very bullish for certain sectors. So in those sectors, you're seeing growth, and I think that's why the unemployment rate has come down a little bit. The thing ahead, George, is what I've said many times over the years, we have a real mismatch between the skills of labor and the jobs that are going to be coming and coming back to the country. And so it's very, very important that you or your kids or your grandkids focus on what are the skills you need for the economy that's ahead.
And there's been some talk that the stock market could take a big hit sometime this year. How do you feel about that?
George, we are so overdue for a correction, it would be healthy.
So you think it's going to happen?
You know, you're coming into summer. You know, as of 3 years ago, 95% of the increases in the U.S. market came, you know, between November and June. So, you know, the old adage, sell in May and go away. So, don't, you know, between needing or being way overdue for a major correction and we coming into summer, you know, I don't think that's a problem. It is true, you've got a lot of big multinationals looking to go deeper in the economy, and the reality is Congress going to keep supporting monopolies, or are they going to let the market happen? I would vote for the market, so maybe that's not so great for the monopolies in the stock market, but... you know, so there will be tension politically around what corporations are going to do to get more earnings.
Catherine's website, Solari, SOLARI.com. Thanks, Catherine. Well, in several hours, sometime between 4:05 a.m. and 6:05 a.m. Pacific time, NASA will attempt to launch a rocket to Mars from the west coast of the U.S. Liftoff of the Atlas V carrying the InSight Mars lander will create a plume widely visible around Southern California. Don't panic, folks, if you see that. What else will you see in the skies? Let's check in with none other than Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center. Hi, Peter.
Good evening, George. And I would add to that, don't panic. Please don't report it as a UFO over Southern California. Every time a missile goes out of Vandenberg, my phone lights up.
Oh, it sure does.
The plume coming out of the rocket. But a lot of very solid, interesting cases tonight. But I'd like to start with a little old business. You probably recall that last Thursday, April 26th, I hastily closed my weekly update with a preliminary sighting report that I had just received just before airtime.
Right, right.
Came from Port Orchard, Washington. Gentleman reported that he was entering or walking towards his garage, and he heard a loud buzzing like a swarm of bees. What I didn't realize at the time, and the reason I touch on this case again, is the sound was so loud that it hurt his ears. It actually caused him to start running towards his garage for protection. And it's a very interesting case. He then looked up. Just before he entered his garage, he looked up and saw two red rings in unwavering formation streaking across the night sky. Well, the interesting part about this, the witness is very solid, very successful businessman from the Port Orchard area, and he reported it to the police. Most people who are submitting a false report don't want to have anything.
They don't do that.
They don't do that. That's right. But in any event, it's a very interesting case, and it raises the question, again, how can a very bizarre, very dramatic event occur like that, and only one person reports it? Very strange. Well, the next two cases I'd like to address come from the Portland area. These are sightings of objects in proximity to airliners taking off out of Portland International Airport. Those reports are now posted to our website. The first one for 4:40 p.m. on April 26th, same day as the sighting in Port Orchard. The next sighting out of Portland comes just 5 minutes later, 4:45 p.m. That's what's known as Class B airspace, George, and there shouldn't be anything flying in formation in that airspace. To get two reports like that in rapid sequence is significant and noteworthy. Next report comes from Arlington, Washington, about 40 miles north of Seattle. Gentleman was monitoring his security camera monitor and was apparently quite shocked to see a fireball move from left to right across the screen. He raced outside to see if he could see the object with his naked eye. It was no longer visible, but he returned to his basement and looked at the screen again. Now the object came back the opposite direction, from right to left this time. And suddenly it stopped in the middle of the screen and just accelerated vertically and disappeared from sight. Very interesting sighting. I get a lot of reports from security cameras. Most of them are spiders on a web or something of that nature. But this one seems much more interesting to me. And the final case I'd like to talk about comes from Pilot Rock, Oregon. This is a good one.
I love that name.
Yeah. Straight south of Pendleton, last Monday night, April 30th, at 10 p.m., a husband and wife were standing outside, and the husband looked to the southwest, and he called his wife's attention to a green light, distinctly green light, that was moving rapidly across the sky. He estimated, and his wife estimated, about one-tenth the diameter of a full moon. That's a large object in the night sky, bigger than Venus, I suspect. Well, it moved very rapidly. It covered the entire southern sky in under a minute, they estimate. And it's significant because a minute is too long for a meteor, or most meteors, I should say. It could not have been an aircraft if they were looking at a green light, because an aircraft, after official sundown, is required to have a red light on its left wingtip, not a green light. Very interesting case, and I guess I can squeeze one more in here.
Sure.
Very briefly. This one comes from down in your area. This is last night. Yet another report of a triangular craft, George. A gentleman, I believe it's a gentleman, who unfortunately elects to remain anonymous, so I can't get back in touch with him. At 9:24 last night, just 24 hours ago, he was looking at the night sky, and his attention was suddenly drawn to a fairly large triangular craft with, yet again, three lights on the ventral surface. How many times have I reported that on coast? Many, many times. Red lights in the corners. He estimates it was doing about 350 knots, pretty good speed for something that's low in the atmosphere and in controlled airspace. Moreover, it suddenly hit the afterburners, figuratively speaking, accelerated dramatically, and just shot off in the night sky, he reports. So there's a lot going on, and all of these reports are now posted to the UFOCenter.com website for reading, for people's reading pleasure.
You got it. Peter, thank you. Peter Davenport, National UFO Reporting Center. In a scientific first, researchers have used an MRI scanner to study the brains of crocodiles. Sounds weird, doesn't it? And even a little dangerous. But the experiment is revealing new insights into the evolution of brains and how mammals and birds acquired the capacity to comprehend complex sounds. The point of the new study was to determine how the crocodilian brain might respond to complex sounds and to see how the resulting brain patterns might compare to those observed in mammals and birds. The scientists were hoping to identify precursor brain structures and functions that allow for the processing of complex sights and sounds. That's amazing. Up next, the animal communicator joins us, Amelia Kincaid, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, back almost after a 10-year hiatus, at least, Amelia Kincaid back with us, author, international speaker, featured in the top 100 psychics in America. Her real passion, though, is assisting animal rescue operations in Africa that create safe havens for elephants, cheetahs, and white lions. In 2002, she was honored to accept invitations to Buckingham Palace to work with the household cavalry of Queen Elizabeth II and to whisper with the hunting horses of Prince Charles. Noted author, of course, including books, The Soulmates with Paws, Whispers from the Wild, Aurora's Secret. Here is Amelia Kincaid back on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hi there, George. What a pleasure to be with you again.
I'm looking forward to this. Nothing like a Friday night talking about communicating with pets and animals. It's cool, huh?
Well, nothing could be more wonderful than actually having something positive to put out there in the airwaves.
Especially nowadays. You know, people need that.
And talk about how much we love them and how much they ground us and bring us back into this space of joy and gratitude and friendship and hope. And, you know, really an ability to be present in the moment with somebody who is just crazy in love.
Well, that's true. You know,
animals are.
I saw you on the television program we did, Beyond Belief, but you haven't been on the radio show in a long time. What have you been doing?
I have lots to tell you, so I'm going to blast through this in the next hour. I've got to tell you that, talking about Hawaii, I led a retreat in Hawaii. Now, I've got my most advanced students flying in. Now, the most remarkable thing about animal communication is not that I discovered I could do it when I had no idea I had this ability. I learned it completely from scratch, kind of from accident. And I discovered that when you're in the state of prayer, You're completely silent, no thought, no emotion. You're sending nothing but unconditional love to an animal. You're able to change the way you operate. Now, one of the things I teach is the difference between ice, water, and steam. They all have the same components.
Mm-hmm.
They're all made up of the same thing. But the way they operate in the world is very different. So the way humans go through life is as if we were little chunks of ice. And we don't have the knowledge that you could melt yourself down, become water, have your meld with another living being. Now we have some of those terms in quantum physics that are beginning to help us because of the zero-point energy field. We're beginning to understand that there are different ways to operate, that you could operate as a wave instead of a particle. So rather than being ice, you could choose to flow out and let your energy flow into the body of that animal and discover what are they thinking, what are they feeling, are they in pain, is this problem emotional or is it physical? And not only can I do it, but I discovered that everywhere I go in the world, now, George, 18th year of world tour. Everywhere I go in the world, I have students walk in that door and say, I don't believe in this. I don't think I could ever do it. Maybe they think I could do it, but they are certain that they couldn't do it. Now, since I saw you, when you and I did that show in Colorado, boy, has it hit its mark, because it started
sure
a little revolution around the world. This is like a chemical reaction. Somebody sees something and says, oh my goodness, that's possible. Now, if she can do it, I can do it. And when they start trusting that there's a way to access other living beings, and that's really what language was doing anyway, we're describing a direct kind of communication that's going on. We're exchanging feelings. We're exchanging thoughts.
Is your psychic ability tied into this? Do you need the psychic ability to do what you do as a communicator?
I didn't think I had it. And when I discovered that this psychic ability, this sixth sense, is what Captain Edgar Mitchell, you know, who mentored my second book.
Yes.
The astronaut mentored The Language of Miracles.
I miss him.
Oh, boy, do I miss him. He was the brightest light in my life.
Yeah.
And he called this the first sense. That your intuition is a part of your body. It's hardwired into us. This isn't some mystical paranormal thing. Captain Edgar Mitchell didn't believe there was a paranormal. He said if one person can do it, normal.
Yeah, he thought it was all very normal. I mean,
he's a West Texan like me.
Out of this world, but very normal.
Well, yeah, because he said if someone can do something, it's not your fault that science has not been able to catch up. And he gave me some of the terminology that I use in The Language of Miracles, that I use in my online school now as I teach around the world. And the ideas are really very logical. There's nothing metaphysical. He said, if it's happening on Earth, it's physical. There's no supernatural. If it's happening on Earth, it's natural.
How did you end up communicating with animals, Amelia? How did that start?
Well, it started because I had adopted a little kitten who was screaming through the night. And I wanted to know what was wrong with my cat. And this was the story that I wrote in Straight from the Horse's Mouth in 2001, not knowing that this tear-stained little diary was going to get published in 32 countries. And I think I've taught in Brazil since I last saw you, because I coached a show horse that won the world championship, and the family flew me to São Paulo.
Really?
To introduce this in Portuguese, of all languages.
I love it.
So I didn't know I could do it. I had this cat, and I took this cat named Beatrice Decker. Now, Bea had gone on the Johnny Carson show, and she made
Johnny
on live TV.
Okay, hold on for a second, Amelia. We're coming up on the break, and we're going to be right back with you on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about communicating with animals. We're also going to take phone calls. in our next hour with you. Amelia's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. She's also got a second one called languageofmiraclesinstitute.com. That's linked up for you, too. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We've got the animal communicator with us, Amelia Kincaid. We'll take your calls with her next hour, but lots more to talk with her about when we come back. And then later on in the show tonight will be those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. Okay, circle the calendar. Saturday, June 9th, Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Silverton Casino, our stage show with special guests including ufologist John Greenwald, investigative journalist, and our buddy George Knapp. Danyon Brinkley died twice, came back to talk about it. Special appearance by a little 13-year-old who's got healing powers of crystals. Live band, Q&A, and a meet and greet. You're going to love the show. Silverton Casino, I'll tell you how to get tickets in a moment, because also Saturday, August 25th, at the Diana Wortham Theater, we'll be live in Asheville, North Carolina, at another great show with different guests, so make sure you're part of it. So this is how you can get your tickets. For Las Vegas, go to coasttocoastam.com, click in the carousel reel or in the events section at the top of the homepage, and click the event, and it'll take you straight there. For Asheville, you can either go straight to the theater's website, which is dwtheater.com, and theater is spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E, dwtheater.com, and order your tickets that way. In the search, just type my name, hit go, pops up again, hit buy, and then you can get into the theater. Pick your own seats that way. Also get there by going to events at coasttocoastam.com. All of us who have owned animals and pets, or if you do now, you understand that connection that you have had with your pet. It's there. It's real. Amelia Kincaid back with us, author, international speaker. When this started for you with the little cat, did it then begin to flourish into all other animals, Amelia?
Well, George, what I teach and what I'm finding is that consciousness is universal. So the consciousness inside that cat, inside a lion, inside a horse, inside an elephant or a shark or a cheetah or an owl or any living being, you've got this radiant, loving spirit. You've got this matrix of frozen light. It's an ability to look at something differently, that I'm going to see their beauty. I want to see their point of view. And, of course, acknowledging the fact they feel feelings. They have complex relationships. They're 10 million times more intelligent than we give them credit for. And what we have to do now is give ourselves some credit that we have the capacity within us to evolve into sixth sensory beings. I mean, back to our dear mentor, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, he said that psychic ability is an emergent faculty in the evolution of the human race. So what that means is that we need it. Now, it may be that there are two hemispheres of the brain that are arguing with each other. And the hemisphere that wants to be in charge is the one that's going to see the outside edges of things, judge, criticize, measure, the analytical mind, which is very valuable. But it's not valuable if we completely dismiss the other hemisphere. And the other hemisphere of the brain receives information. Scientists used to believe that that was a creative hemisphere, and what we're discovering now is that all creativity is truly listening to the universe, that Beethoven's symphonies and Michelangelo's sculptures, they already were being downloaded from some realm of absolutes. When we learn how to listen, what we discover is that we are more magical than we ever could have dreamed.
Now, when you say listen, yeah, you do need to be trained for it or have that ability. How do they learn this?
I'm now teaching online, which is absolutely brilliant. I've got students from Japan to Australia to New Zealand to Germany, Switzerland, Norway, England, and everybody's online at the same time. Now, let's say that What you and I were on a show together where you put me on camera, and I can't even tell you what a splash you made when you were talking to that tortoise.
That was fun, by the way, and it somehow understood me.
We were supposed to have a baby tiger that day.
Yeah, I'm happy with the tortoise, to tell you the truth.
And we had a tortoise instead. Now, you learning how to access a part of yourself that is so powerful, so peaceful, so eternal, the spirit within you communes with the spirit within them. And we have to relinquish the ego, the need to be in control, the need to be superior, and to dissolve ourselves into the love of this living being, the grace, and being in awe of their beauty. Now, that's not the approach that most people take when they see a tortoise. But you did it. And I want to tell you the upshot of that. I was teaching in Palm Springs recently, and I also have a story for you about Hawaii, because okay. I was recently on the big island of Hawaii. But here's a for instance. Now, if you could imagine, when I'm teaching a seminar, and I've got an animal there, or even a picture of an animal, and I have the entire group of people in prayer and meditation, so they're letting go of all their anxiety, all their doubt, their inability to focus, their inability to simply be present, and we're just going to devote ourselves to loving that animal and to learning how to operate in a wider orbit, a broader state of consciousness that includes that animal's thoughts and feelings and experience. Now, let's say I have a dog on the stage and I say, who's his best friend? Now, I think I've told you this. This happened in England. I was at the Field Conference in London years ago. I had 800 people in the audience, including Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, who was in the front row. I'm holding up a cat. I put the entire group in a type of hypnosis. So we're just dissolving into these feelings of love and joy and peace. Now, that's establishing coherence, and that's part of it.
What's easier to deal with, domestic animals or wild animals?
It doesn't matter what it is. They're all creatures that are embodying the beauty of the universe. They're all divine designs. I'm standing here on a stage in London holding up a cat. Said, who is this cat's favorite other cat? 75% of the people raised their hand and said, it starts with a J. They start shouting, Jackie, Jackie. One woman raises her hand and says, it's her sister. She has shoulder-length brunette hair. Another woman raises her hand and says, the cat's missing a blonde woman who just moved to America. Now, the owner almost fainted. The cat's favorite other person was her sister, Jackie. That was the cat sitter.
Wow.
The woman was gay, and her lover had just left her and moved to America and had short blonde hair. Now, this isn't me saying there's something special about me, that I'm set apart. This is me saying there is something hardwired into every human being that gives us the capacity to telepath, to remote view, to find out what's happening physically inside an animal.
Who's doing the work, the human or the animal, in terms of communicating?
You're doing the work. You're stepping into their body and accessing their memories, accessing their energy field. Running their program is if you were them. Now, if you could imagine, and this analogy came to me today, let's say that there's a movie being filmed, and there are people, and you're watching that movie being filmed. But you're not acknowledging that there are cameras that are taking video of that movie. And it's not only recorded, but it's being transmitted all over the world. And it can be watched later. That's what the zero-point energy field is. The zero-point energy field is a library of energetic records. And it's logging the history of every living being. Now, Captain Mitchell said to me, well, you're not reading the animal's mind. You're reading the records in the zero-point field. And I said, that's true, but also this is true. Because why can they lie? Why can they joke? Now, they have a mental and conscious level, and they have a holographic and universal level just the way we do. So there are quantum records, which is the same thing as a person. I mean, animals are easier to talk to than people because animals don't lie.
Well, I was going to just ask you that. They don't deceive you, do they?
They don't hide things from you.
Are they blunt?
Well, unless you have a cat.
Cats lie?
Cats can definitely, well, dogs can also play jokes on people. Horses play jokes on people. They think it's funny. Now, in Hawaii, here was the crazy story. So I was recently on the Big Island. I had the first group came from as far as Hong Kong.
You got out of there just in time.
I'm no kidding. We went to that volcano and honored Pele, maybe a little too much.
Maybe.
Now, I've got students sitting in front of me where I'm asking again about a cat. The girl from Hong Kong said, the other animal at home is a big, dark-colored, shaggy dog. I said, how does the cat feel about the dog? Cat and the dog love each other. She has never seen a picture of the other animal at home. Then they show a picture of the cat cuddled up with a big, shaggy dog. So the students are coming in, blowing my mind. My webinar students are the best I've ever seen in the world. They come in the second week. I took them out on a whale boat the night before we went to see the whales. I had a vision of a mother whale delivering a baby in front of me. And the entire thing is going through my mind as I'm lying in bed the night before we go out on the boat. Also, the biggest, funniest, most, most amazing male whale dancing for me. I thought, okay.
Dancing? How does a whale dance?
Oh, boy, can they dance. So we went out the next day, and I knew it was a humpback. And I'll tell the whole group, what did you say before it happened? I did that with you, with that tortoise, and you could do it too. What do you see coming? I saw the mom and the baby. We went out on the boat. Well, the guy came. The most amazing humpback show. He stayed with the boat for at least an hour, going under and under and popping up and dancing. And so that one I was kind of expecting. But the captain spots another one and says, that's a mother whale, but that can't possibly be her baby. That's got to be a dolphin. They don't bring their newborns to the boat. They don't let humans see their newborns. They don't do that. And then finally the captain goes, oh, my gosh, that's a newborn whale.
Wow.
She brought the newborn. Now, this isn't even the good part because this is just what I
For you to see, right?
And In real life, well, I had one of my best students with me, who I've just certified as one of my best coaches in the world. And she's sitting next to me. We're on the way back, and the male is still circling the boat. I said to her, okay, Lisa, her name's Lisa Brown. I said, Lisa, tell him to call his friends. Now, you can go out for hours and not see very many whales. And I said, what do you see? She said, it's two females. Two females are coming on the way back. We hadn't gone another 10 minutes before those two females showed up. And the captain screaming, there are two females.
And that's all a rarity, too.
It's a rarity. So what we're talking about is the way... Now, you were talking about crocodiles earlier today.
Yeah, they're putting some music through their heads to check their brains. Amazing work.
Well, they've been on this planet a lot longer than we have.
Yes, they have.
When a dolphin or a whale sends sonar, they're sending out a wave that disturbs the water. Now, it disturbs the water in such a way that it almost takes a picture. It takes a picture of the thing that they're seeing. This is how they see. It's sonar, how they see and how they hear and how they perceive. That's going to form a feedback loop returned to them as a three-dimensional replica, like an X-ray that they can read. Now, they're going to know where that boat is, what direction it's going, what speed. That's how they can tell if a man has metal in his body or if a woman's pregnant. They can see inside of you. Now, what I'm teaching is that human beings have that capacity. Until the pineal gland, which is what we now know as the third eye, starts to atrophy at about the age of 7, all human beings have the ability to telepath.
Through that gland.
Through that gland. And culturally, it was until a culture learned a written language. So the Aborigines, the Eskimos, my people, the Cherokee Indians, until we had mathematics and language, which is the other side of the brain taking over, we relied more on the part of the brain that is connected to all that is, the oneness. So we are all cells in the body of God. We are in one unified field.
Is there any animal out there, Amelia, that you can't get to?
No. I mean, what my latest book is called Whispers from the Wild, and one of the best chapter, I think probably the most fascinating chapter, is about bees.
Bees?
Bees.
Huh.
Because
so
I,
you even deal with insects?
Well, why not? I mean, see, who are we to establish what consciousness
is? Well, it is alive, isn't it? And it does have energy about it.
And a lot of their civilizations work a lot more harmoniously than we than ours does.
They sure do. I bet ants would be amazing.
Ants obviously can telepath. Now, what are they doing when they're touching their little antenna together?
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing? Where you get a couple of crumbs under your couch, and the next thing you know, there are 10,000 ants in your house. They're calling each other. They can talk to each other. And
they can also warn each other, I guess.
Sure. The preconceived notion is that we are somehow superior. And now what we need to do is take that idea away and look at everything as a level playing field.
If they only had hands and a thumb, right?
Well, they may be doing better than we are. They seem to communicate better. They work in harmony better. They have laws and order that are in place that make sense.
And you will have animals tell you if they don't feel well, if they're sick. That happens,
sure.
Doesn't it?
I mean, the vast majority of what I do is medical gestalt. So
yeah.
What I'm best at is determining where are they in pain. Is this physical, emotional, or emotional? I mean, let's say that you have a dog who won't eat. Now, maybe you don't know that the dog next door just moved away, and that was their favorite other dog in the whole world. Maybe you don't know that yet. Or that dog could have stomach cancer.
Wow.
And how are you going to know the difference? Or maybe he has a bad tooth. We're learning how to use our bodies as instruments.
Stay with us, Amelia. We're going to come back in a moment. We'll talk more. I want you to get into your book, Aurora's Secret. That's an incredible story, and we'll take phone calls in our final hour with you on Coast to Coast AM.